Blog Talk Radio.
I'm here, Mike is here, and apparently everybody else got hurt. But you know what? It's showtime anyway. Real Sports Talk Radio live on the air every Wednesday night from 7 to 8:30. I am the one and only Randy Zonia, along with the living legend himself, Mike Tramatazzi, or Mike T, as we like to call him here in the Back Sports Page world. You can call us in tonight at 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. You can find us on Facebook at Real Sports Talk Radio. Hashtag us Real Sports Talk Radio. And you can tweet me at RandyBSP. And Mike, your Twitter handle is?
At MTramatozzi. That's MTRAMONTOZZI.
You're going to have to shorten that. You realize that's going to happen.
One day. One day.
No, listen. Seriously, I don't know. I think you're doing yourself and these listeners a disservice by keeping it that long, because people would be like, okay, T-R-A-M. What the hell did he say?
Can't.
Yeah,
I think Twitter needs a, if you go on the internet and you start typing in Google, it'll pop up because it recognizes it. They need to get that for Twitter.
Well, they do now. Like, if you're already a friend of somebody, that's one thing. But if you're not a friend with them already, then it just turns into mass chaos. It's chaos. But people start throwing babies, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's all bad news. Anyway,
yeah.
8 p.m. tonight, Anthony Mullenville from Monday Morning Hangover will be live with us to talk a little football, fantasy football, with everything that's been going on lately. There's so much going on right now, literally. I don't think the full 90 minutes will help us get through everything. But Mike will definitely try. Mike, bad news on my part, I sprained my ankle. I know that's not the line we're supposed to be starting off with. Mike, I sprained my ankle. I don't know how the hell I did it.
I pulled a hamstring the other day. It was pretty bad.
I thought you were say you pulled the ham from the store, because I know you like to have ham.
Nope, the hamstring.
That last joke was not one of my best ones, so I apologize. I'll try a little bit more during the show. Okay, so, there's so much going on in New York, outside New York. There's so many places where to go to start with, but I think there's only one place where you could start. It was announced yesterday morning that Aaron Rodgers is going to be on the shelf. It's the beginning of the NBA season, so right now, like, any injuries is really not that big of a story, because by the time the end of the season comes around, those injuries will be healed. But Aaron Rodgers, this is the famous quarterback from the Green Bay Packers, former Super Bowl champion, on the shelf for a couple weeks, broken collarbone. We were discussing this earlier today. This affects a lot of teams. This is not only just the Green Bay Packers, but this affects the Green Bay Packers' opponents.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at who the Packers have to go up against. Obviously, they get Philly this weekend, who only just put up 49 points, and their quarterback threw 7 touchdowns. But you look at who the Packers face after that. They're now in a 3-way tie for first place, so that affects then Detroit and Chicago. They face the Giants next week. They face Minnesota, Green Bay. Detroit. You get Atlanta, Dallas, Pittsburgh, Chicago. Right now, if you just go liberal with the time frame, and he's only out 4 weeks, that's Philly, Giants, Vikings, Lions. 6 weeks has him potentially missing the Dallas game. So whatever break, if you're a Giants fan, you think you're getting by missing Rodgers, potentially Dallas gets the same break. Philly already gets the same break. So the teams ahead of you, potentially you're getting the same break you got. The only team who didn't was Washington, who played them in week 2.
Okay, well, let's go over this. We used to do this with Jose all the time. But look, you have, you know, 7 weeks left. Let's go over each game. You say win or loss. I'll say win or loss. We'll tell why. Okay, so this week against Philadelphia, Green Bay will
lose.
Okay. Yeah, their offense is out of control right now. Philadelphia's, the only thing that's amazing about Philadelphia's offense right now is, you know, Nick Foles is really throwing the ball well. McCoy is not running well. McCoy is a fantasy stud. He's a guy who they want to sort of build the franchise around as far as the running game, and he's been so inconsistent and so disappointing that it's been very, very difficult to really get a good handle of what he's going to be week by week.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 777 yards, but he's only got 3 touchdowns, and you look at what he's done in his last 5 games, 44 against the Raiders, 48 against the Giants, 55 against Dallas. He did have 116 against Tampa Bay, but then again against the Giants, 46. So he is first in the league in rushing, but a lot of that is coming in these first couple games that are, you know, 184 against Washington. Then he had 53 against the Chargers. He had a buck 60 against Kansas City, then 73 against Denver. So, you know, you're looking at 184 once rounded up, you know, 190, 160, 120. You know, that's almost 500 of his 777 yards being in just 3 games.
I'll be honest with you right now. Philadelphia is probably one of the more inconsistent teams in the NFL. You don't know which team's coming. Is it the team that's only going to score 3 points like they did against the Cowboys, or the team that scored 49 like they did last week? I look at Philadelphia. This Green Bay is going to still have an opportunity to score points. Philadelphia's defense is not that strong. Injuries have plagued the Packers all year round. This whole year has been plagued by injuries. I'll tell you something. If he's out for the 6 weeks, Packers fans get something else to do when the playoffs starts because the Packers won't be playing.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Philly's defense, and as bad as that game was, the Raiders actually got more first downs. They put up more total yards. They put up 560 total yards, more than the Raiders did. They ran for 200 yards. They passed for 350. You know, granted, a lot of that is maybe with the game out of reach, but that's still a lot for a team to give up in a game that you won by almost 30 points.
I agree totally. Now, here's a really good question, too, before we go through the rest of the schedule. On December 8th, they have the Atlanta Falcons. That's an 8:30 game on NBC. Now, that has to be flexed out. They have to flex that game out.
They already flexed the Giants. Yeah, I mean, once they got the ability, they quickly flexed out Giants, Packers. So
I got to know what else is being flexed in Week 14.
Week 14, let's find out. I'm sure there's a game that hasn't been protected. I don't think it'll be
five games. Give me the top 5 games you think it would be, and I'll say yay or nay.
Indy, Cincinnati.
Two small markets. I don't think they'll do it.
Carolina at New Orleans.
Yeah, I would take a chance on that, giving Carolina a prime-time spot. It's risky. Go ahead.
I mean, it is a Seattle-San Francisco day, but I think Fox protected that game.
Fox protected that game, and plus they've already given that game the Sunday night spot. But then again, they also did that with the Cowboys and the Giants.
But I think you can't have teams play on Sunday night unless it's for a division. Like, it has to be Week 17, like one of those winner-gets-in games.
Gotcha. Thank you for the correction on that. I appreciate that.
Kansas City, Washington?
No, thank you.
I don't think you're going to go with Oakland and the Jets.
No, definitely not doing
that. Giants-Chargers?
It would be intriguing because it's Eli Manning and Philip Rivers. Check back with me in about 2 weeks on that one.
And then Atlanta, Green Bay, really. I mean, Tennessee, Denver.
That one maybe because Tennessee's playing well.
I would have to see more from Tennessee. Obviously, they won last week, but they struggled a bit. You know, they're sitting at 5-4 right now, 4-4. They played Jacksonville. leading up to that game against Denver, they play the Colts twice, sandwiched around Jacksonville and the Raiders. So if they can somehow sneak one of those Colt games, and the Colts, up until that fourth quarter in Houston, looked pretty bad in their first game without Reggie Wayne, and then it took a total collapse by Houston for the Colts to storm back and take the lead. You know, if you figure in the next four games, Jack, if Tennessee can get to 3-1 and be sitting there with six or seven wins, and in the thick of the playoff race, I think that's a game against Denver, who's obviously going to be one of the wild card teams or win that division. I think that is a game as well that could possibly be flexed. That's a sneaky game, though, because like you said, you want to see a little bit more from Tennessee in the next couple weeks to make it worth flexing. Cleveland and New England? You know, the Browns are another team. The Browns are another team that are sitting there 4-5 that, you know, in their next four games before that, they play a hurt Bengal team, they play the Steelers and the Jaguars. They have three games. So that's another team that could potentially be sitting there at 6-6, 7-5 if they win out. Then that game looks interesting too, because then the Browns are fighting for the playoffs. And that's the Browns are a sneaky team if Campbell can stay healthy, because they have a very underrated defense that not a lot of people talk about, but it's got probably the best secondary in the league, if not its top three. And they give up the least amount of points per play. I think it's like 4.5 yards per play, which is number one in the league. Plus, it's an interesting game because you have the whole Belichick thing. He coached the Browns. The Browns are an old-school marquee franchise with a big fan base. It would be in New England. You know, that's another game. I think we're looking a little too far ahead in it, because a lot of these games are contingent on other teams, winning. What if Carolina continues to win out and that game against New Orleans is for first place in the NFC South, and you got Cam Newton going against Drew Brees? Granted, Carolina has a very tough stretch into that game with San Francisco, New England, Miami, and Tampa. But if Carolina can somehow get, right now they're at 5-3. If they're somehow sitting there at 7-4 or 8-3 going into that game, or 9-3 going into that game,
they'll move that because it'll be a marquee game. Now, just going back to Cleveland for a second, do you think Cleveland can make the playoffs? Let's make a schedule. You have Cincinnati. I think that's a loss.
I mean, Cincinnati looked pretty bad against the Dolphins, and you did just lose Geno Atkins on top of losing Leon Hall. They do have a very good offense, though. I mean, with Marvin Jones becoming that number two to A.J. Green, and then the emergence of Gio Bernard with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, that's a dynamic offense. It's an interesting matchup because the Browns did beat them at the beginning of the year 17-6, and they held those guys in check. So, I mean, yeah, you look at the Browns' schedule. Outside of that New England game, is there another game on that schedule that you look at the Browns and saying they don't realistically have a chance of winning that game, or they're going to have to play perfect to win that game? I mean, look at it.
The Bengals. I look at two of them. I look at that Chicago game. Because it's, you know, not for nothing. I know Cutler's tough, difficult. Cutler will be back by that point. They're difficult. They're overall a difficult team. Cleveland's defense is suspect. Can they stop Brandon Marshall? Can they stop Matt Forte? Is their defense good enough to compete with Chicago? And then I look at that Jets game. That Jets offense is not strong, but that defense is probably one of the best in the league. And I think they can definitely put a stop to Jason Campbell, because Jason Campbell likes to run the football. He likes to scramble, likes to find receivers while he's on the move. The Jets, one of the best run defenses in the NFL. So it's going to be a Cleveland problem. So you said those three games. I think they're going to go out of those four. The two against Pittsburgh, the Jacksonville, Cincinnati, I think they're going to go 2-2 on that. So you're splitting that, so already you're at, I think you're at 6-7.
But then you add in the two Pittsburgh games in Jacksonville. Do you say they win the two or three of those? That puts them at 8, 9, and 7.
I have them in Jacksonville. I have them splitting the Pittsburgh games, and I have them losing against Cincinnati. So that leaves those three games.
That puts you at 7-9, then.
Okay. No.
Split the Pittsburgh game.
I'm not talking about those three games yet, those New England, Chicago, New York games. So Oh, right, okay. Now they're at 4-5. You're at 4-5, and I'm splitting them 2-2. So you're looking at
six and seven.
They beat Chicago. Let's say they lose to New England, so they're at 6-8.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat Chicago, so they're 7-8. So you're saying that the AFC wildcard spots is going to go to an 8-8 team? That's going
to
be tough.
I think you're going to have to get to nine. Because if you look at it right now in the AFC, the teams battling for six, because five's obviously going to either Denver or Kansas City. So one of those two teams is getting five. Six, you have the Jets right now in at 5-4. Miami, Tennessee, San Diego, Cleveland, all at 4 wins. Oakland, Baltimore, Buffalo have 3 wins. And then you have Houston, Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, who I think are going to need, like, massive help to get in. I think all three of those teams are legitimately done. I think Buffalo's on life support, and I think the Ravens and Raiders need to get hot because they play some teams that are ahead of them. Obviously, Baltimore is going to be playing the Jets. Oakland plays the Jets. Do you move Raiders-Jets in Week 14?
It just matters where the Raiders are. It matters where the Raiders are. Like, again, you have to understand also, when you move a game, you're looking at ratings. I think maybe you move that in the Indy-Cincy game, but you have to see where Indy is at that point. Losing Reggie Wayne hurt them. And their big thing is, Andrew Luck is a big – you want to have the big stars and important games on national television on that Sunday night. It's the big stage. That Sunday night game has replaced Monday Night Football. That is the game you work that you want to play in. Now, they pulled the Giants, Green Bay game, off of that. And the next team on that, we were talking about the Packers before. This is an unbelievable opportunity for the New York Giants. Now, the Giants have to play what's in front of them first. They have Oakland this upcoming week. If they can get past Oakland, and then they play Green Bay, and then they play Green Bay, they beat Green Bay, the following week they have the Dallas Cowboys, they could be 4-6 going into that Cowboy game. This is a whole new division. Now, there's something that has to go on there. The Dallas Cowboys have to lose a game before they play the Giants.
Dallas plays New Orleans, and then they have their bye. So if they win the New Orleans game, then the Giants can't tie them for first when they play them. But if they lose, there's no other opportunity for Dallas to gain back a game because they play the bye. There's their bye in between it.
Right. So at this point, the Giants beat Green Bay. I'm sorry, the Giants beat Oakland, then beat Green Bay. And then they can go out, stay home, and beat the Cowboys. Then you go into that Washington game, a game below 500, an opportunity to go 6-6 and have a firm grasp of the division, be right in there for the division race. Now, we all know that the NFC East representative will not be making the Super Bowl unless they get really, really, really hot.
The Giants would have to win out and get to 10 wins, something like that. Win 10 in a row and be red hot.
No, here's the deal, man. If you're able to get to 500 and go 6-6, you tell me who they're better than as far as those divisions, as far as the division leaders and teams that make the playoffs. You tell me who they're better than, and then I'll I'm going to tell you right now, the playoffs started today. You have Seattle. Are the Giants better than Seattle?
No.
San Francisco?
No.
New Orleans?
No. New Orleans at home or New Orleans on the road?
It would be an away game for the Giants.
Then no. New Orleans at home is a different animal.
Chicago.
Both teams healthy? Yes, the Giants are better than the Bears.
Green Bay.
Both teams healthy? No.
Detroit.
Yes.
Dallas.
Yes.
Okay. So the Giants are not making it to the Super Bowl. It's going to be very fun
because
to see
the
them
Giants
make the
Giants would have to. The Giants would have to win. Like I said, you'd be. They haven't played well in New Orleans in years. You know, they've beaten the Saints on the road when the Saints have had to come up to Giants Stadium, but on the in New Orleans, the Saints have hung, 50 spots on them.
Yeah, no, seriously. It's been ugly. It's been really, really ugly. Real quick, if you're a Giants fan, you'd be happy to know your three-headed monster running back is back. You have Peyton Hillis, Brandon Jacobs, and Andre Brown will make his season debut this upcoming week. It's going
to
be a lot of fun.
I'm interested to see what he's going to be able to bring, being that he hasn't had a meaningful carry in a game in about a year, because he broke his leg in the Packer game last year. It'll be interesting. I'm kind of intrigued to see what he can bring to the team. A lot of people have said how he's a guy that can make holes and make yards out of nothing. That remains to be seen, because this Giants offensive line, even with Hillis playing, as well as a guy coming off the street can play, he still has to, the line still has some questions in terms of run blocking. And, they've gotten a bit of a break the last 2 weeks playing two teams that were pretty bad at quarterback. And the defense, really, they never gave the other teams a chance. I mean, you look at what Ponder's put up the last 2 weeks for Minnesota, and you really, really have to wonder what was Leslie Frazier thinking, where he didn't even play Ponder, at least in the second half of that Monday night game, because they were just anemic, and he didn't put him in, and they lost the game where they got into the red zone multiple times and had turnovers and missed field goals. They've put up over 30 points each of the last two games with Ponder. Really makes you wonder what Leslie Frazier was thinking. Now, in the Eagle game, Vic got hurt, Foles was already out, but Matt Barkley was abysmal. So you really have to look at it and wonder, the Giants are getting a pretty good break having to play Pryor, who's good, but I don't think he's anywhere near being a quarterback that can, I think, win a game solely on his arm. And then no Aaron Rodgers, with the potential of it being Seneca Wallace. I mean, if the Giants don't go to 4-6, I think that's a really big problem for them, because the schedule is shaping up for them to be 4-6. Now, they don't normally play running quarterbacks well. I mean, you look at the first Eagle game, and Vic was annihilating them before he pulled his hamstring. Pryor's the same type of guy. His passing's a little bit better than I think people give him credit for, but his legs, nobody's doubting his ability to run. I mean, the guy's got over 100 yards rushing multiple times this year, and he had a 93-yard touchdown run against the Steelers 2 weeks ago. So I think the game will be a little bit closer than people think, but if McFadden doesn't play and you're basically relying on Rashad Jennings, who's good, but he's not Darren McFadden, I think that can really hamper the Raiders' offense. And you saw with their defense, if their defense doesn't come to play, they just get run off the field. So it's a game the Giants should win, but it's a game that I think some people are expecting to be a little bit more of a layup than it should be, because based on the two quarterbacks they just played, and tell me if I'm wrong, those games should have been a lot more, 35-7 and 42-10 than they were 23-7 and 15-7. I mean, those were games going into the fourth quarter when they really shouldn't have been.
We have to switch gears here. I want to get your opinion about what's going on down in Miami. I just actually sent you an article right now.
Yes, I see that.
I'm really disturbed about this article and disturbed about the situation that's going on in Miami right now with Jonathan Martin and, with Cognito. I can't pronounce his last name. Cognito.
Incognito.
Incognito. I don't like this situation. I don't think there should be any hazing. I know there's rookie initiations. If you're going to do it one little thing for the rookies. The focus, you're getting paid to play football. And I know you have to do things to build that, just, you know, build camaraderie, build a good atmosphere within your team. I get it. I understand it. You want to be able to show team camaraderie. But I don't know how you feel about this, Michael. I have a real issue with this. This guy is emotionally distraught. He's having a really, really tough time. It says here he checked himself into the hospital last week, and he's just going through a whole heck of a lot. And I feel really, really bad for the guy. Right now, we're at a point where, you know, hazing is done in fraternities and sororities, and it does happen in the NFL. It does happen in the NBA. I can remember a time where I saw Blake Griffin walking around with a pink fanny pack on his back, and him walking around with a lollipop in his mouth, carrying around that pink pack. And that stuff is fine. When you have a text message going out with explicit name-calling and racist remarks, it's crossing the line. I know this guy has a reputation of being a dirtbag and being a tough guy. There's no place for this in football. I hope they suspend him. I hope they do. People are defending him, so they're saying, well, this is how the NFL is. I don't think so. I don't think it should be.
The only thing I'll say is I think a lot of people are jumping to a lot of conclusions right now about it. Yeah, Incognito's got a reputation as being a really dirty player. Yet, I don't know if you saw it today, Jeff Darlington and some of the other guys who've been down in Miami getting the comments from the players this afternoon who went against what the team instituted, basically a gag order on Monday and told them don't talk about it, and they decided that they were going to talk about it and kind of come to the defense of Incognito. Tyson Klebo, Brian Hartline, Ryan Tannehill all came to Incognito to the point where Klebo and Hartline kind of made it sound like Jonathan Martin is going to have no place on this team when he comes back. And I think a lot of people just assume that given Incognito's history that he was picking on this poor, mild-mannered kid from Stanford. But if you listen to what Brian Hartline said, they said he says that Martin was parading around that voicemail that everybody that got leaked out this weekend, that he was parading around that voicemail around the locker room and laughing about it. That Tannehill said, I'm very surprised because, you know, Incognito came to Martin's defense multiple times and was always the first one to come to his defense and stand by him in terms of, like, camp fights and things like that. Hartline basically saying how or Klebo saying how I don't understand what he's doing. And he's basically he's almost ruining another man's career, and I don't understand why he's doing it. So what I'm trying, and I think a lot of people are trying to figure out, is the truth lies somewhere in the middle here. You've got a lot of players and guys like Tannehill and Hartline who, you know, I don't know them personally, but they seem like they're stand-up guys and not loose cannons, who are basically saying, like, what you've assumed the last couple of days as the truth can't be further from the truth. And Tannehill went as far as to say, you know, if you asked Jonathan Martin 2 weeks ago who his best friend on the team was, he would probably tell you it was Richie Incognito. That's how Tannehill associated the two as being as close as they were. So, yeah, I don't like what happened because clearly something went haywire. And Tannehill said the prank they played on Martin that supposedly led to all this is a prank that they played on him multiple times last year as a rookie, multiple times.
Well, that's,
so
and that's the problem.
Answer
there's got to be a line.
But it lies
somewhere
in the middle. You know what I'm saying? Is who's right now? Are all these players wrong in the way they interpreted the Incognito-Martin relationship? Or did something happen where Jonathan Martin couldn't handle something and is now using this as an excuse to kind of make it his absence seem okay? I don't know. You don't know. None of us know. But the fact that these players would come to his defense, multiple players, not just one, multiple, strikes me as strange. That strikes me as we're not seeing something here. We're maybe we are misinterpreting all this, and the Dolphin players are saying, hey, listen, we've been around them more than you have, and we've seen them interact with each other. This is not how it went down. At some point, someone's going to have to ask Jonathan Martin, what happened? Why are all these players who are also part of your team saying that what you're interpreting it as is wrong? Why didn't he go to the coach? Why did his agent go to the coach? Those are things that need to be answered.
Well, here's a quote from Andrew Luck. He was Jonathan Martin's teammate at Stanford. He goes, Andrew Luck stated, I love John like a brother. We had a lot of fun, a lot of good times together at Stanford. It's obviously an incredibly fortunate situation, but out of respect for him and what's going on, I'd rather not talk about it. I think a lot of the other NFL players are getting tired of the media. I know Antoine Roll from the Giants, Rex Ryan from the Jets. Everyone's getting asked about this situation. I think if there's really that big of a problem right now, I think poo-poo on the coaching staff of the Dolphins for not having a better handle on this and taking care of this inside house. I think.
But but when you see it like that, if the players are coming out and saying that we didn't see this as a problem, what are the coaches going to say if they go to the players and say, hey, listen, what's going on here? Is everything okay? And the players say, yeah, everything's fine. You know, if Ryan Tannehill is coming to you and he's the quarterback, granted he's 22, 23 years old, and he tells you, you know, if you asked Jonathan Martin, he would probably have told you Incognito was his best friend on the team. How are the coaches then to assume that what's going on is something that's detrimental to the player? And if you look at what, in that same article, what Vic Eumont said, who was Martin's high school coach at Harvard Westlake in Studio City out in California, he was never – before he wasn't around Nebraska LSU kind of guys, he said. He's always been around Stanford, Duke, Rice type of players because Harvard Westlake was a private high school. He said, locker rooms full of Nebraska, LSU, Southern Cal, Miami type players, they'll look at this as a weakness, what he's done. If he makes it through all this and if he was encouraged to come back to the Dolphins, he'd come back with a vengeance. He's saying that he could see how the team might not welcome him back after this, which kind of institutes that even he kind of believes that maybe Martin took what other players have taken as ribbing. Maybe he took it as something more personal and couldn't handle it. That's entirely possible. If you've got a player that is not, I don't want to say mentally soft, because the Giants went through the same thing with Prince Amukamara, but he doesn't. Amukamara didn't take it personally. I mean, there's entirely this possibility that Martin took things privately. But if Hartline's correct, and Martin was parading around this voicemail earlier in the year and laughing about it and playing it for people and laughing about it in the locker room, why now is it being played as this portrayal of him being bullied? And why wasn't it then a problem? That's, I think, the crux of what Hartline and these guys are having a problem with, is you were doing this, now all of a sudden because you left the team, now it's this big problem. And questions need to be answered, because you can have Hartline and Tannehill and Klebo and Donnell Ellerby and all these guys come out and say all these things about Incognito, and they all seem to be coming to the defense of Incognito. Jonathan Martin needs to answer some questions. He needs to answer some questions, and he needs to do it soon, because right now you're just getting into a whole big tale of they said, you said, but he's not really saying anything. It was his agent that started all this and got told the Dolphins about what was going on. So what is going on? No one knows what's going on, and the players don't even seem to understand why this has gotten from point A to point Z in about 2 seconds.
Well, right now, Roger Goodell said that there is going to be an investigation with this, and there's no timetable on the investigation. This was reported by ESPN's Chris Mortensen. He returned to California, took a leave of absence from the team. I think there's a lot more to this going on. Maybe he's oversensitive. You know, we just don't know what's really going on. It's going to take a little time to figure all this out. We're going to jump around now. We're going to go over to the NBA, the National Basketball Association, something that I know a lot about, something that you know a lot about. So I think that's the route we should go right now. Agree or disagree on that?
I'm sorry.
I
dropped my microphone.
You dropped your microphone. Okay. I said, let's jump over to the National Basketball Association, something that we both know a lot about. I think I might know a little bit more than the average man, and that's okay. And as we're talking about that, I am watching
I tend to think I do. I tend to think I do, too, and sometimes it gets me into trouble.
Yeah, I know. You and I seem to be knowing a little bit more about the NBA than others. Right now, I'm watching, as we're talking, it is 25-17 Pacers over the Bulls in the first quarter, and the Bulls just hit a big shot at the end of the first quarter. Derrick Rose on the bench with two fouls. It is right now 25-19 at the end of the one. 36-25 Charlotte over Toronto. Charlotte looking for two in a row after last night's win against the Knicks. More with that game coming up in a few seconds. Orlando with a 33-20 lead over the Los Angeles Clippers. And Philly has a Washington has a 39-30 lead over Philadelphia in Philly with 10:59 left in the second quarter. Utah, Boston at 7:30. New Orleans at Memphis tonight at 8 o'clock. Cleveland at Milwaukee at 8. Golden State at Minnesota at 8 o'clock. Phoenix at San Antonio at 8:30. And the last game of the night tonight on ESPN, Dallas visits the Thunder at 9:30 p.m. That's on ESPN television. We're going to go with the NBA the first week of the season. There's so much you can do. I think we have to go back to New York, Madison Square Garden last night. The Charlotte Bobcats visited the New York Knicks. And a few minutes into the game, Tyson Chandler, the center man for the New York Knicks, out 4 to 6 weeks with injury. Listening to Sports Talk Radio in New York, not a lot of hope for the Knicks to start with this year, but now it looks like they're very skeptical that this thing is going to be able to turn around. We're even talking about possibly breaking up the team. Mike, you're a Knicks fan. What do you think?
You know, I'm an eternal optimist.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So, you know, when people tend to write things off, I tend to try and find a way that they can prove something wrong. Listen, Tyson Chandler's their most important defender. As important as Iman Shumpert and Meta World Peace Ron Artest are, I'm going with all five names, by the way, this year. I'm going to see how that flies. as important as those guys are, they can't defend the paint like Chandler can. Kenyon Martin can to an extent, but it's to an extent. Kenyon Martin's number one defensive player of the year. They have a really big height problem right now because Cole Aldrich and Bargnani are their two tallest players, and that's a problem. Amari Stoudemire is their next tallest player. That's a really big problem.
Okay.
To me, I think the way they're going to win games is, and I think the small lineup they used in the fourth quarter last night was a mistake because it was Prigioni and Felton at the one and the two, and then Artest at the three. I really saw it last night against a Bobcats team that matched up pretty well against the Knicks, or that the Knicks could match up pretty well against with a small lineup. Should have used Shumpert at the two, and they waited too long to bring Shumpert into the game. To me, they're going to have to play small ball because, like I said, when your two tallest players are Bargnani and Cole Aldrich, that's a problem. I wouldn't play Bargnani at the five. Me, personally, I would play Kenyon Martin at the five, Carmelo at the four, play Artest at the three, Shumpert at the two, and Felton at the one, and have a bench of Bargnani, Amari, J.R. Smith when he comes back on Sunday, Hardaway, Prigioni, and Udrick. And I guess Cole Aldrich is going to have to suit up at least, unless they decide to suit up Tre Murray instead. That's the lineup I would use because it's your, to me, that's your best defensive lineup. And I think you're going to need to start games with better defense because they're starting very slow in these games. Outside of the Bulls game, I think they were down, six, I think, at the end of the first. They were down, obviously, 21 to Minnesota, and they were down 12 at the end of the first. Or they were only down three at the end of the first at the Bobcats, but they were down 12 midway through the first. So
Well, the Bobcats looked good last night. Bobcats did exactly what they thought they were going to have to do.
The Bobcats shot 75% in the first quarter against Minnesota or against Toronto just now. So.
Well, I'm going to jump over to the Western Conference real quick. I'm going to go over these eight teams, and you tell me, out of these top eight teams, who's not going to be in the playoffs? And then we're going to do thumbs up, thumbs down. Anthony Mullenhill coming on at 8 o'clock with us to go over fantasy football. I want to go over these eight teams in the West. Do you want me to go 8 to 1 or 1 to 8?
We'll start with 8 to 1.
Okay, Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City Thunder.
Eight?
Yep. Right now they're officially the eighth seed in the Western Conference.
I would have to disagree with that. I think your eighth seed is going to end up being more of a.
Oh no! This isn't my eighth seed. This is what they're listed on in the standings right now.
I know, but I like to throw a wrench into things, and because that.
Oh, okay.
What we're playing is, like, obviously Oklahoma City's not going to be an 8th seed.
Right, of course.
Do I think they're the 8th best team in the West? No, I think they're higher than that.
No, I'm just saying right now,
really?
This is the rankings with the wins and losses.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas has gotten off to a better start than I think some people might have thought at 3-1. Obviously,
yes.
Phoenix the same. I don't think anybody thought Dallas and Phoenix being a combined 6-2.
And I don't think anyone pictures Minnesota being there either.
I think a lot of people like Minnesota if they were healthy. You know, the biggest problem with Minnesota last year is they weren't healthy. They were looking good in the lockout year, and then Rubio got hurt. Last year they didn't have a lot of Rubio and Love, and then Pekovic got hurt. Alexei Shved got hurt, and they were basically playing with Kirilenko and a bunch of D-leaguers. Towards the end of the year last year. This year they've got Kevin Martin, they've got Shved back, they've got Rubio back, they've got Barea, they've got Love, they've got Pekovic back. That's an efficient team that could play a lot of ways. And think about this. I was joking with a friend about this today. Minnesota, obviously everybody knows how they royally screwed up the 09 draft with the 4 and 5 picks taking Rubio and Flynn back-to-back. What if they took Steph Curry with one of those two picks, and then Rubio, knowing how Johnny Flynn panned out, which everybody wanted them to do. Think of Curry, Love, Rubio, and Pekovic with, like, Alexei Shved or Kevin Martin coming off the bench as the sixth man.
I think that would have been really interesting, because I think you'd actually have put Curry at the 2 and Rubio at the 1. Problem is,
absolutely, you could.
The problem is, Rubio is smaller than Curry.
And think of the options to run through. Obviously, all three, obviously Love and Curry could really shoot the three. Rubio, you really want to slide off of and make him shoot jump shots because he's very good at getting into the paint. But think of, A, the dribble, like the D'Antoni-type offense, driving kick with those two guys spotting up for three with another guy. You know, obviously, Shred or Martin can shoot the three as well. Or the think of the pick-and-roll matchups you can run. You can run a 1-4 with Rubio and Love. You can run a 2-4 with Curry and Love. You can run a Love-Martin pick-and-roll. There would have been so many options for a guy like Rick Adelman to run that it's almost unfair that I thought of it, because now I really wanted it to happen, because everybody, I know Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe were coming up with the league pass teams, that what's the team you would stop on league pass to watch. That would be everybody's – forget Oklahoma City or forget teams like Cleveland. Minnesota would have been the dynamite, hands-down league pass team for people to watch if they had that nucleus of three players. Now, could they have held them together? Who knows? Curry didn't sign a max deal, and neither did Love. So I guess in theory it would be possible. But really, the landscape of the collective bargaining agreement doesn't allow you to have three maxes. It really only allows you to have two.
What do you think right now about some of the teams that's going on right now in the Eastern Conference? Like, did I totally get everything wrong? Like, I originally said my order was going to be Miami, Chicago, Indy, Brooklyn, New York, Washington, Atlanta, and Cleveland. Am I totally wrong? Like,
I think you got it wrong at the top. I think a lot of people like Indiana, but I still think Miami, when push comes to shove, is going to get the one seed, because even the Bulls, in their last bit of three-peats, the only time they didn't get the one seed was in 93 when the Knicks had the one seed. But it never got
right
to the point where they needed that seven at Madison Square Garden. The way I had it was Miami. You know, I had Chicago there too, because I think a lot of people, myself included, have been – it's like battered family syndrome, where you think everything is like, okay, it's okay, no matter how many times you've been wronged or hurt, it's okay, they're still good. And that's the Bulls for everybody. It's okay, they got Derrick Rose back. It's okay, look, now they've got Richard Hamilton to play the two. It's okay, look at how good they play defense. You know, that's how they get you to believe that they're this juggernaut of a team that people should be afraid of, when if you watched the Bulls and the Knicks on Halloween last week, it was a brutal game, because the Knicks actually match up well against the Bulls defensively. So do the Heat, so do the Nets, and so do the Pacers. And the Bulls can stop anybody. You know, the Bulls are really good defensively. They're giving up 98 points a game this year, but they're always routinely in the lows to maybe mid-90s on a bad season. They don't score. You can't win in today's NBA playing 90s-style basketball. It doesn't work. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. You know, it doesn't. The rules don't allow it. You can't hand-check. There's zones. They don't allow you the ability to play defense or to win games in the high 80s, low 90s, like the Knicks and Heat used to do, you know, back in the mid-90s. It doesn't work. And unfortunately, the Bulls still subscribe to that. They don't have guys that can score on their own, and it's a free-flowing offensive attack. They struggle just to get to 90 points every game. They struggle. If they didn't get some really – if they were a floater, a Derrick Rose floater away from being 0-4, and that's a legitimate problem.
I got to tell you something. Derrick Rose, what they're going to lack in offense, they're going to make up in defense. They're going to have those 85 to 91, 94 – scoring outputs as they
but what
is
that
their opponents
in the playoffs, though? But what has that gotten them in the playoffs? They go against teams that can create their own offense and teams that can put someone on Derrick Rose and suffocate them, and then all of a sudden the Bulls are struggling to get to 70 points, and you know the Heat are winning the series in five. The Bulls can't win playoff series against teams that can create their own shots and get easy buckets, because everything for the Bulls has to be perfect. The Bulls, if you don't turn the ball over and you play decent defense on Derrick Rose, the Bulls can't score. And it's been a problem now going on 4 years. And eventually, at some point, they're going to realize it. This mix of talent in the regular season, but it doesn't get you anything in today's NBA in the playoffs. It just doesn't.
They need a two-guard. They need a two-guard that's going to help them score. Jimmy Butler, they're hoping that he can give you some offense, but he has to develop a jump shot. Dunleavy doesn't give you much. He doesn't give you – he's going to give you maybe on a good night 12 points. 6 points, 6 to 12 points. That's what you're getting out of Dunleavy. Mike, we have a call on the line. Let's take a listen. Real Sports Talk Radio, you're on with Randy and Mike T.
Would that be me? Hello?
Who's this? Yes, who's this?
This is Gary from Denver.
Gary Adler from Denver, Colorado.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing tonight, Gary?
I'm doing good. I saw you're on live, and I wanted to call and say hi. Didn't know we were talking NBA, but it's all right.
I appreciate
right?
it.
No,
those,
of course, Mike.
Those Denver
I didn't hear nothing about the
there.
Nuggets, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, they're struggling right now. They're 0-4. They're 0-4. Yeah. They're 0-4. You know, no George Karl. They lose Andre Iguodala. They really didn't do much to refill their talent base over there. You still have Ty Lawson. You still have Fareed, who is a beast. He's I love his nickname, the Manimal. He's a great rebounder. I think he's one of those guys that I wish he can hit his free throws and or be able to hit some sort of jump shot for him to be an all-around player. You guys are waiting for Danilo Gallinari to get back and healthy. I said this about Denver every single year. Ever since you guys lost Carmelo Anthony, which I don't think was a huge loss, you guys are one player away from really making some noise. I don't think they're going to be in the playoffs this year. I think George Karl was the glue that kept that team together and made those guys
yes,
play better than
they
did.
Yes, they took away our coach.
Well, they didn't
You're
take
right.
away.
They took our coach away.
I agree. I was really high on Denver the last couple of years because their style of play that Karl liked to run fit the roster. It was small. It was athletic. They used the altitude to their advantage, and they basically wore you down to the point where a 5-point lead at halftime turned into a 30-point blowout in the second half because you were gassed and they weren't. Now, I don't know if Brian Shaw, being a Phil Jackson guy, and a guy that played coached in Indiana last year with Vogel, who's another guy that really didn't subscribe to the small ball mismatch type game that Denver did. To me, it kind of feels like a mismatch in terms of personnel and philosophy. You do still have Lawson, and I think he's a stud. Chandler's a very good role player. You know, JaVale McGee is a very good role player. Obviously, Fareed is a monster. You're hoping you can get Gallinari back to be at least 50% of what he was before he got hurt this year, and then obviously next year when he's got a full year of health. Outside of that, though, you know, Nate Robinson is a guy that would have fit better on George Karl's Nuggets team than I think he would on this team. The fact that they let Iguodala go was a problem perfectly into that team. He gave them a little bit more defense than I think what they get. Him and Chandler and Corey Brewer were three very underrated as a threesome, guys that could defend multiple positions and make it tough for you while also playing that George Karl style. So I would tend to agree. I think losing George Karl is the biggest loss. And I think bringing in the new general manager as well, with Masai Ujiri moving on to Toronto and bringing in a new coach, to me singles out that they're in a transition mode. I think they're in a transition mode to moving towards a more traditional lineup and maybe taking JaVale at the five and leaving him there and kind of maybe playing with, like, Chandler at the three, when in reality he's played his best when he was a four in D'Antoni's offense and a four with George Karl. I think you're seeing that now, and I think that's going to cause Denver to take a step back from being that 50-plus win team. And I think, you know, they may still make the playoffs as a 7 or an 8 seed, but you've now moved back into that early stages Carmelo teams where they were making the playoffs, but you really didn't expect them to get anywhere just because the level of their style of play and their talent is no longer a problem for teams, because I don't think Brian Shaw is going to want to play that same type of offense. It's not the way he was coached. It's not the way he's been taught as a coach. Phil Jackson didn't play it, and Vogel doesn't play it. And those are the two main influences for Shaw. So I think that's your biggest problem with Denver, is that I don't think there's a match.
We've got a lot to learn with a new coach, a whole new game plan, so to speak.
Exactly. I don't know how much Shaw wants to run the triangle, but to me personally, I would think it'd be the funniest thing in the world if they could record JaVale McGee trying to learn the triangle, because it would be absolutely – it would break YouTube records. It really would.
We've got a lot of time to see yet.
We've got a lot of time to – sorry with the delay. Sorry, guys. It's we got a whole season to see yet. We've only four in and four down, unfortunately. But just lagging a little behind. Well, we got wiped out on the first game, but, you know, on the rest of them, you know, it was, close and here and there is another story, too. But, Yeah, we got to see. We got to see. It's all new field for these guys.
Well, not only
that,
too.
New court.
But not only that, but Brian saw, like, again, he's a Phil Jackson disciple. He's one of those guys, like Mike said, he loves the triangle offense. I think when you have that type of offense, you'd make sure you have the type of talent that goes along with that offense. Like you just said, Gary, it's only four games. We don't have to go. I know the people in Denver are not exactly worried about the Nuggets so much yet because right now they're focused on the Denver Broncos. Talk to us about the Broncos out there. What is the general attitude and atmosphere about the Denver Broncos in the second half of their season since this was their bye week?
Well, you know, what's going to happen is the Nuggets are going to be jealous of the Broncos. And they're going to want to end up out there on the platform as well. So we'll see what will happen. You know, the best is yet to come. You know, it's a whole new era for these guys with a new coach.
Real quickly, Gary, let's let everybody know where they can find you. I know Pro Players Association is on Sunday.
Yep, we're on ESPN 1580 AM. You can also hear us out there on the coast at ESPN1580.com. We're on Sports and Perspective every Sunday morning, NFL pregame, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And Randy was one of our guests just a few weeks ago. We appreciate that very much, Randy, coming on the show. Checking out a prospect for a new sponsor, the Sunbird Restaurant, high atop a mountain overlooking Colorado Springs. And I just met a beautiful woman. It's her first day here today as a server, and hopefully could be my next wife. I don't know. We'll see. But we're having a good time. I just got my ribeye delivered, so I'm going to let you guys go back to your shtick and have a great time, and we'll talk to you again. And Randy, you're welcome, and you guys are both welcome on the show anytime.
Oh, thank you very much. I don't know if the city of Denver can handle us. But we'll, thank you very much, Gary.
I'm not sure I can do it both at the same time, but yeah, I can handle you.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. We'll look forward to talking to you again. Take care.
See you.
The one and only Gary out there, he's out in Denver, Colorado. Always nice enough to give a call. Real quickly with the Denver Nuggets too. You know, I like McGee. I think McGee is a good player. Can you picture right now the type of talent Denver has that's sitting there like misused by Brian Shaw? Can you imagine if one of those big guys came to the Knicks? Oh God, they would love JaVale McGee. Knicks fans would fall in love with that guy because of his hustle, his effort.
Well,
don't get me wrong,
JaVale's talent is through the roof, but don't act like you wouldn't watch YouTube videos of JaVale learns the triangle, like, for hours on a time. I would absolutely watch. I might not go to work for a day and just watch videos like JaVale learns the triangle, JaVale learns a UCLA cut. Just amazing things that we're missing out on because Brian Shaw is not as hip as we would want him to be. But it's the big problem with that team. What was the big problem we had last year with Indiana? They didn't run. They didn't get in transition. What was Denver's big thing last year? They ran. They got in transition. They're
They ran, and guess what? They got eliminated by a team that runs and shoots better than them in the Golden State Warriors.
Exactly.
By the way,
well, that's the problem. That's the problem. When you get into the playoffs, it's such a small sample size that if you go, you look at the Knicks, you go cold shooting for a couple games, you lose, and now all of a sudden your season's over.
Well, not only that, but look, I want to point out something else about the Golden State Warriors. Bad job. You know, I thought they've done a very good job building that team. Look, they're averaging 112 points a game. They're only giving up 99. So, you know, they're a good team. They're going to be an elite team in the West. I say, you know, we'll go to thumbs up, thumbs down in a few minutes when Anthony's on with us. But bad job by Golden State by giving Andrew Bogut a contract extension. What a bad decision. There's no motivation.
Did you like
to have
some
to
of the precisions in it, though? Did you like some of the provisions in it? Like, if he plays like a top five center, he gets another $5 million. That's great. I would just tell him, you didn't play like a top five center. Who's making that distinction? I think he has to make a all-star team. But, Grant, like, I mean, if I'm them, I'm saying, well, we don't think you played like a top five, so you're not getting that money. Just a strange contract. I agree. It's a weird contract that I don't I didn't like it either. I didn't like it because I don't think he's a guy that you can really risk giving that money to. You have an interesting lineup of players where you can go small with David Lee. To me, in the Western Conference, outside of Dwight Howard, Bogut doesn't help you against anybody. And he doesn't really help you in the Eastern Conference either, because who's he going to go against? Joakim Noah? He can't hang with Joakim Noah when he's healthy and when he was in his prime. So,
well, remember,
I don't like Bogut as a player.
You tell me five better centers than Noah anyway. Okay, I'm sorry, than Bogut anyway. I don't think there are five centers. Listen, I think Bynum has the
probably
possibility of becoming. Bynum has an opportunity to reinvent himself in Cleveland. Okay, I'm wondering
absolutely.
Why Mike Brown didn't start him in the beginning of the year, but. And that pick and roll type of game. Listen, Bynum can shoot the jump shot. He can get to the basket. He can rebound the ball. His big thing is, can he stay healthy for 82 games? That's really the big question you have with him. I'll be honest with you. I don't think you use him for the full 82. I think Cleveland has to go on a strong run in the first 15 to 20, maybe the first 30 games. If you get about 7 or 8
the
games,
availability of the availability of Varejão makes it very easy to work Bynum into the rotation and into playing. You want Bynum playing in March and April. You don't really necessarily need Bynum too much in December and January outside of just getting himself into a rhythm.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's bring in Monday Morning Hangover's Anthony Mullivall into the conversation. You can check them out every Thursday night before the NFL game at 7 o'clock. Monday Morning Hangover Football Podcast, Fantasy Football. Anthony also knows NBA, too, so he can join in this conversation and hang out with us. He can hang out with the cool kids, as they say on the streets. I don't know if they really say that on the streets, but I'm just going to say it anyway. Anthony, good evening. How are you, my friend?
Hey, what's going on, Randy? Thanks for having me.
Are you one of the cool kids? I have to know this.
Now I am, apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was before,
yeah.
But I just got upgraded big time, and
all
it took was a simple phone call. That's why everyone should do it.
Well, listen,
it's like getting a
everybody...
gold sticker at school.
Yeah, it's like, you think about, remember like when you were in third grade and you got all the math questions, addition questions right? And I don't know if they really did addition when you were in third grade. I don't know. But the gold, you know, they gave you that gold star, and that's what this is. This is your gold star, man. This is your gold star.
You just won a sportsmanship award.
Yes, exactly. I just won the sportsmanship award. I want to get your opinion on this. Golden State Warriors, we're talking about Andrew Bogut. Golden State gave him a contract extension with incentives in there. The guy hasn't earned his money. He was a number one pick, but he just hasn't earned his money. Do you give an extension out like that?
I mean, to be honest, I don't even know the exact numbers they're looking at or what the terms are. But the only thing, the talent's obviously there, and especially in Golden State, they do need someone like that. It's just a matter. He's almost like an Andrew Bogut light, Bynum light, where he can't stay healthy. He could stay. Obviously, he's been on the floor more than Andrew Bynum has. And he's not as good as Andrew Bynum. That's why I say he's a light version in both respects. But if he's healthy, he's a very productive player. He's just solid more than anything else. He'll block shots. He can hit. He can knock down open jumpers. He can score from a variety of ways on the floor. It's just you can't rely on him. And it's not like with big men, these are recurring injuries. It just keeps happening, and it's just shown throughout his career. So. No, I personally wouldn't spend the money on him, especially since they do have a lot of young talent there. They're going to have to pay Klay Thompson eventually. I'm not even sure where Curry's contract is at right now, but you got to figure you'd like to keep those guys more so than spend the money on Andrew Bogut.
And we were just also talking about Andrew Bynum. I actually like this. This is one of those other low-risk, high-reward signings during the offseason. Cleveland took a shot with Andrew Bynum. It's a two-year deal. Mike, I believe it's a second-year option. Am I correct on that?
What?
Mike,
yeah. No,
All right.
When I'm trying to multitask here because I'm watching Carlos Boozer flop around and scream and yell, and it's very flustering because he flusters the heck out of me. But I really actually think Bynum was the best signing in terms of what he signed for and what he could potentially give them and where he could potentially take that team in terms of notches in Eastern Conference. Iguodala was a big signing. You talk about some of the other guys that signed big deals in the offseason moved. Obviously, Dwight Howard's going to move Houston into another category. But if Bynum's healthy, and healthy in terms of Bynum is not necessarily needing to be the number one center on this team because he does have Varejao. Like I said, Varejao being on this team allows you to move Bynum along slowly and have him ready for March and April. But Bynum makes it easier on Kyrie and Waiters on the perimeter in terms of not having to worry about being so locked down defensively because if someone gets into the paint, Bynum can deter the shot. For what they signed him for, I'm not sure there's a guy that can potentially have as big of an impact on a team going from lottery to playoffs and potentially even being a mid-seed if everything works out correctly like Bynum can. I really do. I think if Bynum's healthy, that's a guy that can take a team. You know, Dwight Howard's going to be taking a playoff team to a playoff team. You know what I'm saying? Bynum has the potential to make Cleveland a 45-win team. And I think it's a real possibility.
I agree with you, but the reason I don't agree with the theory, and let me tell you why. Dwight Howard goes, you said, from a playoff team to a playoff team. I disagree in where I think they go from a playoff team to a championship contending team. And now you put Andrew Bynum on the Cavs where, you know, it's all relative to how much they signed him for, but it's a big if he could stay healthy. But the worst thing that can happen is if he does stay healthy. They're a very young team. They're talented, but I think they're still years away. And the last place you want to be is the middle of the pack in the NBA. So you're saying he could bring them to a possible 6, 7, 8 seed?
I agree. No, I think you're right. You don't want to be a 40 to 43 win team in the NBA. But I think the next step for Cleveland is to be a 45-win team. I don't think you're looking at 45 wins as Cleveland's ceiling. I think if you look at their roster with Waiters, Thompson, and Kyrie all in their second and third years, and then you factor in what you're going to get from Bennett as the number one pick, which so far hasn't been much, but it's still the jury's still out on him being a pretty solid NBA player. I don't think anybody doubts he's going to be a solid NBA player. Whether or not you take him at number one is a different story. Because right now, I think if he was in this year's draft, he's probably the sixth or seventh pick, which is tells you more about this year's draft than what last year's was. But I agree. I think Dwight Howard does make them a championship contender. It'll be interesting to see if they have the perimeter defense to defend the likes of Oklahoma City and the Clippers, because they both have big men that can guard you down, can play Howard down low. Jordan, Perkins. Perkins, pretty much his sole purpose in the NBA the last 10 years has been to play Dwight Howard. I think the Celtics made that known. I think the Thunder made it known that he's a guy that will play the Dwight Howards of the world when they get into playoff series. So I just look at it strictly as Cleveland needing to take that next step, and health plays a major role in it because Kyrie hasn't been healthy in his 2 years in the league.
He's been busted
exactly.
up.
Exactly. It's a shame because when he's healthy, he's absolutely dynamic. I mean, he's probably the third or fourth best point guard in the NBA right now, and he's only going to get better. Once he's legally able to drink, he's only going to be better. I mean, that's the scary thing when you think about it. Him and Waiters aren't even 21 yet, and neither's Thompson. I think they all turned 21 right around each other because they're all pretty much the same age. Remember, Waiters just spent an extra year in college.
Well, here's something else you have to remember, too. There's this whole little thing called NBA free agency at the end of this year where some guy who's playing down in Miami right now has the opportunity to become a free agent, and you're trying to draw him in. So you have a stud player like Kyrie Irving, and you have Anthony Bennett who's going to be able to play well. And then you have this other opportunity with Varejão, and then if Bynum pans out to get back into game shape, if you're LeBron James, you could say, I want to stay here with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and these guys are getting older, and there's no guarantee that we're going to be, you know what I mean? Or
no,
you're looking
100% right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You're looking at the Cleveland. That's why I said Game Bynum is a low-risk, high-reward type of situation because Bynum is the type of player that playing with LeBron James, and let's not even, you're not even adding Kyrie Irving into this, but if Bynum can really give you a gut, maybe 15 and 10, and Kyrie Irving's going to give you 20 points and maybe 10, 11 assists a game, you add that with LeBron James being the MVP type of style player he is, and then you could put guys like Anthony Bennett, Waiters in there, Varejão. You have yourself, Cleveland might, LeBron can go back and fulfill that prophecy of bringing a championship to Cleveland. Now,
it stinks that you mentioned LeBron because, first off, I thought we were going to get through the whole show without mentioning LeBron, which would have been, I think, like something would have broke somewhere in the world. But I was all set to make a joke how, if Cleveland can make the playoffs and you can potentially lure Chris Anderson away from Miami, I mean, that makes you a championship contender right there. The joke was all set, ready to go, and then you said LeBron, and I was like, well, I can't make the joke now because everybody knows LeBron's a free agent.
Yeah, well, now because of the New York Knicks situation, whether or not losing Tyson Chandler is as big as a deal as everyone thinks it is, now you have a situation where will Carmelo stay? He's saying all the right things. I want to retire. Nick, how many times did we hear players say I want to retire? This they sign, then they go sign somewhere else. Anthony, I want to get Anthony's opinion on this too. Look, the Knicks are in a real vulnerable situation right now. Their season can get away from them real quick, right now. If you're a betting man, do you bet Carmelo Anthony is a Knick by the end of this year? Going into next season?
No, absolutely not. And I think, and he came out, he said exactly how he felt when he said he wanted to leave. I mean, the first time I asked him, this is what he came up with. And then he changed his mind, a week later, or publicly changed his mind. I think it was just the front. And the front office came up to him and, you can't be saying that, especially the beginning of the season. They have playoff aspirations. I think we can all agree that they're not a championship-caliber team right now, especially after losing Chandler. I think they could still make the Eastern Conference playoffs. It's definitely a big loss, but this is not where he wants to be. It's not where he wants to be, and they actually, watching pardon the interruption today, Tony Kornheiser had a funny quote where he said, now, with Tyson Chandler hurt, Carmelo has an invite for two things. He has an invite to shoot 40 times a game, and he has an invite to leave once the season's over.
I agree with that.
I actually can't disagree more with it. Carmelo forced his way out of Denver. He forced his way out. He didn't want to be in Denver anymore. He wanted out. He can very easily force his way out of New York, but he understands New York. It takes a very different type of mental player to play in New York. Somebody that can move out of and compartmentalize what the pressures of New York are and things like that. Obviously, players like Karl Pavano and people like that can't play in New York, but people like Carmelo Anthony can thrive in New York because they want – listen, I've been watching Carmelo since he's been in Syracuse, and that's going on 10 years now. He's a very me guy. He wants the ball last. He wants to take the most shots. He wants to be the best player on the team. That's what he wants to be. That's not necessarily a bad thing because, as we've seen, he's probably one of the best two or three pure scorers that the NBA has had in the last 10 years. From a pure scoring standpoint, he can do everything. I don't think he leaves, because why did he force the trade to the Knicks instead of waiting until the offseason? Why?
Right, you have to remember why. He
wanted the most money.
Right. He wanted, at that point in time,
he did it because of the money.
The lockout, and they knew that the collective bargaining agreement was going to change, and they weren't going to have the opportunity.
So where are we at right now?
To get that money. So where are we at right now is it's simple. Now he's gotten his first major contract, and now he wants to win
Randy,
the championship.
Randy, he gets is he going to turn down $30 million? Is he going to turn down $30 million?
Do you think the guy forced
a deal to a team so he could get the most money instead of dealing with the fact that the team would probably have been better if he waited until the offseason and got the new max deal? Instead, he wanted the old max deal. And they even changed the rules. Didn't they change the rules where you can't trade and extend? Didn't they call it the Mellor rule? I think they got rid of that with the new CBA. I'm telling you right now, the Knicks aren't in that bad of a position, because people seem to forget that after next year, there's no one left on the roster. Nobody. Nobody. You don't think they've told him, listen, you're going to have carte blanche to build and get whoever you want to play with that's a free agent. Rondo's a free agent. Love's going to be a free agent. All these guys are going to be free agents in 2 years that he can get to come to New York. Is it going to work? Who knows? Amari Stoudemire couldn't get it to work, but I think Carmelo Anthony is a different type of player than Amari Stoudemire. I think Carmelo has a little more pull with certain players, especially Rondo, who he's really good friends with, and Love, who he's played on the Olympics with and who he's pretty good friends with. Don't underestimate the fact that the Knicks are really only going to have Shumpert and Hardaway, and I think Felton, under contract. They can add a full match. They can add a pass. You're going to have. But if he goes to, say, the Lakers, he's not going to want to. Kobe Bryant already said he's not taking a pay cut. He's not going to take a pay cut to stay with the Lakers. So that right there is a max. The Lakers, he's not going to take. He's not going to take less money to go play second fiddle to somebody. He's not going to do it. He wanted out of Denver to be the guy. So he's not going to be he's not going to go somewhere else. He's the guy that's going to take. He's going to opt out. He's going to take his extra $30 million. The Knicks are going to play another year with his core players, see what they can do with it. And then after next season, you pull the stick on the dynamite and blow the whole thing up. That's been the way it's been since they got Tyson Chandler. And they screwed up the whole amnesty thing by getting Tyson Chandler, screwing up the amnesty, and not using it on Amari. They said, well, these guys have 3 years left on their deal. What we're going to do is we're going to build a team that can compete for 3 years. Maybe we'll get lucky. Players will get hurt. We'll get hot. Maybe we can win a championship in 3 years. You made it.
Started over.
Carmelo's going to celebrate by opting out. And then when he comes back, which I'm telling you, I would be
there's really few things that I would say because rely on other people
and anytime they rely on other people
is under being wrong.
But everything he said this season unless it's 20-win disaster has no bearing on whether he stays or goes,
because
in 2 years, like I said, they have a carte blanche to sign anybody. They can make a trade. Maybe they make a trade next offseason. Maybe they're in the offseason here, and someone says, we'll give you LaMarcus Aldridge and Wesley Matthews for Tyson Chandler and Tim Hardaway and some other cap filler to make it work. Doesn't that then right to something that can help for Carmelo? You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone wants to make it this dire situation because Chandler's hurt and the team's 1-3. But let's look at the big picture here. This has no bearing on whether he actually stays or goes, because starting this offseason, when Amari and Chandler are expiring contracts, those are the biggest trading chips you can have in the NBA, and the Knicks have two huge ones. Huge. We're talking like $20 million in expiring contracts per person for a team that may want to shed salary. That's huge. That's a huge play for the Knicks to have two of them.
Well, Mike, I'm not going to deny that. I'm looking at the salaries right now. That you're right, 2015-2016, there's only J.R. Smith, Raymond Felton, Amon Shumpert, and Pablo Prigioni under contract with Tim Hardaway with a team option. I want to bring this up as far as LeBron James is concerned. LeBron, there's a possibility he might opt in for another year and finish out the commitment of playing with Bosh and Wade, and then just become a full free agent, full-fledged free agent, and be able to walk away. That's still a possibility, too. While we have Anthony on the phone, Anthony, thank you for being patient. I know you're the fantasy football guru, and we have to get with you about this. Real quick, give us the fantasy football report. Man, we have to do thumbs up, thumbs down to get the heck out of here. Fantasy football report with Anthony Mulville is brought to you by Uppy Custom Creations. They bring fame to your name. Go to uppycustomcreations.net to make your name as famous as possible. You can call the number to the ton up because the creation's on it. Ask for Mike. They'll bring fame to your name. Anthony, what do we got on the fantasy football report for this week?
Randy, I just want to start out. My deepest sympathies, you lost by 0.9 points this week, huh?
You had to bring that up. Yeah, I did. And the other thing was, if he would have connected one more pass to Brandon Marshall, I would have been golden.
That's it?
Listen, I won by 65, so.
That's the way you get
my
business.
That's how you don't worry about one more pass
from Brandon Marshall.
Exactly. That's how you don't worry about one more pass from Brandon Marshall. You just make sure that, listen, I'll just go ahead and get 22 points from Gio Bernard and 17 from Pierre Garçon, 40 from Andre Johnson, and 26 from Phillip Rivers, and we'll be okay.
Well, here's my thing, though, and Anthony, here's the amazing part. I had no kicker, no defense, and I had two other spots open. So if I would have had one other person flying, this thing wouldn't have been a conversation. So, but with that being said, Anthony, what do you got for us this week?
Well, what I'm going to look at first, we're going to go over a few free agency pickups. Just simple guys. It's actually guys who have been hurt since no one's really shown through in the past few weeks, especially last week. Running backs like Shane Vereen, Andre Brown, both owned in our league. But the new guys are going to come through, Rashad Jennings and Sean Green. These guys, Rashad Jennings, Darren McFadden injured his hamstring again, the same hamstring that's always been bothering him, kind of hampered his career. I always thought he was a top five talent, but just these injuries, this is why he's not going to get the contract extension at the end of the season. Same reason why I don't think Andrew Bogut's going to get one. But anyway, neither here nor there. Rashad Jennings, nice matchup against the Giants this week. As we all know, Giants defense really struggles, especially struggles to stop the run. They cut Dan Connor this week. I mean, they're going with the guy they traded for midseason, John Beeson, at linebacker, among others. So I like Rashad Jennings as a nice top 15 running back play this week. No Sean Marino, actually a little banged up. He's still going to play this week. I said this weeks ago, Monty Ball, he's the number two guy there. Ronnie Hillman's been an active scratch for the past few weeks. So Monty Ball, if anything does happen to No Sean Marino, and he's had a pretty extensive injury history as of late too, Monty Ball becomes the number one guy in the best offense in the league. So I think he's worth a speculative add in deeper leagues. As far as quarterbacks are concerned, I think we all saw what Nick Foles did, nice seven-touchdown game, second seven-touchdown game this season, Peyton Manning being the only fantasy MVP, Peyton Manning being the only other quarterback who's done that. Pick up Nick Foles going forward if you do have him. He's going to start this week, and he's probably going to start going forward. Not much else, to be honest. As far as wide receivers are concerned, if Percy Harvin is not owned in any league, looks like he may make his comeback this week. So start Percy Harvin, pick up Percy Harvin, put him as a stash. Fantasy playoffs are coming up soon, especially teams who are in the upper echelon of their standings. And as far as defenses are concerned, a defense that may not be owned in most leagues, who I like as a high matchup this week, Tennessee Titans go against Jacksonville. So we all know Jacksonville really struggles. Their passing game, they just like to throw the ball a lot, so they might get a lot of passing yards, but they also turn the ball over a ton too. So Tennessee Titans defense is a defense that could be owned in many, you could be seen across many waiver wires. Pick them up, start them against Jacksonville's offense this week. And that's pretty much it for now. So, Randy, are you still what place are you in right now? I know you're in first place as of last week, I believe.
I am second place. But I like the fact that, you know, we might have a Jay Cutler sighting this week. And if that is true, then I will bench Jason Campbell and I will go with having Peyton Manning and Jay Cutler. Again, I did not have a defense last week. I did not have a kicker. I was missing a couple different positions. What kills me is the fact that Miles Austin is no longer a viable option for the Cowboys. So that was a bad draft pick, and I also lost Reggie Wayne around, you know, in the to injury. So there's a lot of negative things going on there. Now, gentlemen, we have to actually go into thumbs up, thumbs down. We're about to the last 5 minutes. I'm going to give you both a few topics. You say thumbs up, thumbs down, and I'll give my opinion on it too. We're going to start with the New York Yankees giving Derek Jeter a one-year, $12 million deal. We'll start with Mike. Thumbs up, thumbs down, and why?
Thumbs down. Can I get two thumbs down? That's how dumb it is. He got a $3 million raise for hitting a .190. Now, I understand they had, it does get some semblance of salary cap relief by doing this now, because it actually alters the average annual number down from like 15 to 12. So it actually saves them a little bit. It's actually not as to me, it's inconsequential the amount it saves to the message it sends that we're trying to get under 189, but we're going to give our 40-year-old shortstop who hit 190 last year a $3 million raise, pretty much just because he's Derek Jeter, and Derek Jeter can do no wrong, and we have to grovel at the feet of Derek Jeter.
Anthony, thumbs up, thumbs down.
He said it perfectly, actually. I mean, I'm going to give it a thumbs down. I think me and you have discussed this before. Nobody hates Derek Jeter or the Yankees more than me. So while I kind of like the fact that they're overpaying him and just having less money to spend on more, you know, on players that can actually help them out, I just hate the fact that they're still paying this guy and just still keeping him on the roster. I'm just looking forward. I just can't wait till the day he retires. I actually I have a bet with my best friend that he's not going to reach 4,000 hits and is looking phenomenal right now. So that's just what I'm rooting against. So I you don't root for anybody to get injured, but if Jeter just stays a little nicked up and misses games here and there, I'd be overly happy.
Okay, I'm going to say thumbs down. Jeter, didn't really do much to earn less deal. I think if you're going to have Posada retire, Mo retire, and Pettit retire, I think it's time for Derek to walk away too. I just feel that it is that time. So this is a thumbs down.
Real quickly, I just want to say, I've had this argument with somebody. I want to hear what you think real quickly. If Derek Jeter announced in spring training this is his last year, does he get the Mariano Rivera treatment from around the league as a send-off?
I think
no.
He does.
I say no because I think people actually – don't like Jeter.
Right.
And I think people – Rivera, I think there's a thing with people where they don't like Jeter because Jeter's this guy who always gets the hot girls and he plays for the Yankees and he's the shortstop. I think there was a grace about Rivera that people respected. And for some reason, I just don't see Jeter getting that type of love from people. Is he going to get like a nice applause in his last at bat maybe at each stadium? Maybe. People will be nice to him because he's a Hall of Famer. He's not going to get plaques. He's not going to get things. There's not going to be these big pregame ceremonies. I don't think he gets it. I don't even think it comes close.
Totally agree.
Next topic real quick. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are going to do fine with Rodgers on the DL. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs down. We went over their schedule in the beginning. These next four games are pretty tricky. Six if you go into, Atlanta and Dallas. I think they're going to struggle to score because you're going to be relying on the running game, which is, solid with Lacy and Franklin, if he's healthy, and Stark. So they've got some running backs. They're starting to get their receivers back. Jones came back on Monday, so it'll be interesting to see how much he plays this week. But
No, I still think when you have Seneca Wallace as your starting quarterback, who hasn't played a meaningful win, I think, since he was in Iowa State. So that was going on, what, 10 years ago? I don't think when that's your option at quarterback, you're going to have problems.
Anthony?
I'm thumbs down. And actually, you know what? I'm going to say thumbs up. And I'll tell you why. I'm a Detroit Lions fan. This is, you look at the Detroit Lions schedule for the remainder of the season, Chicago and Green Bay were their toughest matchups by far, and it looks like both starting quarterbacks are going to be out for those bouts. So, and not only, you're right, Seneca Wallace is terrible. He's terrible, and he may not be their best option. You know who might be their best option? Matt Flynn. They're looking at possibly signing Matt Flynn, who for two consecutive preseasons in a row got beat out in training camp by a guy who's never officially started an NFL season. And Russell Wilson, the first year, and Terrell Pryor this year. So that's just, they're in shambles right now. From a fantasy perspective, all those wide receivers who are wide receiver two, wide receivers three guys, James Jones, Jordy Nelson, even Jarrett Boykin, who was a nobody before the season, you just have to drop them on everybody's radar. So from a real-life perspective, obviously got to give it a thumbs down, but I love it as a Detroit Lions fan.
Okay, and last one, thumbs up, thumbs down. Jason Kidd should feel like he's on the hot seat if the Nets don't win 52 games and get to the conference finals.
Thumbs up, because I think Prokhorov is crazy enough to attach those types of expectations. I think they're expected to win the Atlantic. I think they're expected to get to the conference finals. I think they're expected to give Miami a challenge. So I think anything less than that, according to Prokhorov, may be a disappointment and grounds to be fired. I mean, when you work in the NBA, there are crazy expectations tied to these coaches. I mean, if you want to look at it in the strictly personal, actual statistical sense, Mike Dunlop tripled the amount of wins the Bobcats had from the year before, but he still got fired. Granted, they went from 7 to 21 wins, but still, you know, to me, that would signal signs of improvement if I'm Michael Jordan, but it didn't. So, yeah, you know, is Prokhorov crazy to fire him after 1 year if the Nets win 46 games and don't, you know, get out of the second round? Yeah, I think so. I think absolutely. I think that's the type of guy that doesn't want to have, you know, egg on his face and look silly.
All right, gentlemen, we ran out of time. So I'd like to thank both of you guys for coming on. Mike, always a good having you on. Anthony, tomorrow, you're back on again.
Yep.
Monday morning hangover.
Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Right before the Thursday night game starts, we'll go over all your fantasy outlooks for the week. I'm actually watching a soccer game right now, and they just scored. Randy, I got to go. Thanks for having me, guys. I'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Mike T, see you next week. Same bad time, same bad channel.
You got it.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone. See you next week.